you waiting there. No, let us get straight to this. I'll just do the throw line, and we'll go from there. All righty.
Very good.
Here we go. He is an associate professor of political science, and he is an associate professor of political science at St. Francis Xavier University. He joins us from Halifax this morning. Good morning to you, Jamie.
Good morning.
Benjamin Netanyahu is navigating now being at war and being prime minister in a coalition government, a war that is now being fought on three fronts. Just walk us through the complexity of the situation he finds himself in right now.
Yeah, well, so the Israeli political system requires coalitions. No prime minister in the country's history, and that includes Netanyahu, has ever enjoyed a majority in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. And that's due to the idiosyncratic proportional representation system there. Now, on the one hand, the Israeli system is far more inclusive and diverse than Canada's first-past-the-post system. But on the other hand, every government has to be painstakingly cobbled together one seat at a time from a wide array of parties to get to 61 seats or 51%. That also makes the Israeli system more brittle than ours. Small parties can demand disproportionate power for their support and threaten to leave and bring down the government if they don't get it. Now, Netanyahu has been no exception. He's held a slender majority since 2022, comprised of ultra-right, ultra-nationalist, and ultra-religious parties. And that's not to mention the charges of corruption he faces domestically and the looming threat of an indictment from the International Criminal Court for war crimes related to the ongoing war in Gaza. In other words, Netanyahu remains on thin ice. But I think the events of recent days, and here I'm thinking about the Israeli attacks on Hezbollah and the Iranian ballistic missile attack against it, I think these are likely to improve Netanyahu's prospects.
There are those who would blame him for much of what is going on. You know, his desperation to hold on to power has resulted in the tens of thousands of lives lost. Is that fair for somebody to say something like that?
Well, I think his prospects have ebbed and flowed over the last year. The attacks a year ago on October 7th were perhaps the single greatest challenge to his popularity in his entire lengthy political career. He long presented as quote-unquote Mr. Security, but October 7th was easily the biggest security breach in Israel's history. After October 7th, centrist parties joined his coalition in a show of national unity. But you're right, disagreements on how to prosecute the war ultimately led to their departure. That was back in June, and it once again left Netanyahu with a narrow coalition. It left him beholden to his ultra-rightist, ultra-nationalist flanks. Israelis, by and large, do not approve of Netanyahu's handling of the Gaza war. They want a ceasefire, they want the remaining Israeli hostages held by Hamas returned, and they want a plan for the day after. They don't want a forever war. They're sensitive to Israel's international standing. They don't want a permanent Israeli reoccupation, which would involve persistent casualties. And in the main, they don't want the reestablishment of settlements there. Netanyahu, though, has managed to turn things around in the past few weeks. He's promised to effect the return of the more than 60,000 Israelis who were evacuated from the north of the country near the border with Lebanon, which came under persistent rocket fire by Hezbollah on October 8th, a day after the initial Hamas attack in the south of Israel. And in recent weeks, Netanyahu has begun to deliver. Israel has hobbled Hezbollah. Hassan Nasrallah and most of the other senior commanders have been killed in various strikes. A respectable portion of their rocket and missile stores have been wiped out in aerial attacks, and their middle management has been broken in the pager and walkie-talkie attacks of late September. And this has raised Netanyahu's popularity significantly. Indeed, so much so that Gideon Saar and his right-wing New Hope Party joined the coalition Sunday last in a vote of confidence in Netanyahu's handling of Hezbollah. This gives Netanyahu another four seats for a total of 68 today. Now, this provides Netanyahu with some breathing room, but still, if either of the ultra-Orthodox or ultra-nationalist parties bolt the coalition, that's the end of his government. That would trigger an election.
This war is now the wider war that many people had feared, and while he may be making gains against Hezbollah, he has now Iran to contend with. How does that situation play out?
Well, there are major disagreements in the coalition. There are disagreements in the coalition and the Israeli public. Much of the Israeli population, much of the military brass, prioritizes the return of the hostages. The feeling is that Israel can continue fighting in the hopes of eliminating Hamas, or it can accede to a ceasefire, it can see the return of the hostages. But achieving both is highly unlikely. There's also a debate about the plan for the day after. A year after the initial Hamas attack, the Israeli military has succeeded in creating a vacuum in Gaza. It's effectively broken both the governance and the military capacity of Hamas. But there's no consensus in the country on who or what will fill that vacuum. The Israeli public does not want to see a reoccupation of Gaza with all that that entails. But Netanyahu's ultra-nationalist flank, they demand it. They refuse to see anyone but Israel in charge of Gaza. And they think that the resettlement of Gaza is the only way to achieve this. Now, Netanyahu has punted for more or less the last year. The risk of this, of course, is that without a plan, Gaza simply becomes a forever war, a quagmire.
Israelis reflecting on and mourning today, obviously, for victims of October 7th of last year. How does that impact the impact of that day? How does that affect the way this conflict continues to unfold?
Yeah, it's a somber mood today in Israel. It's a day of reflection and mourning. But more broadly, I think what was pierced on October 7th was the Israeli feeling of security, and that was replaced with a sense of extreme vulnerability. A year on, that sense of vulnerability very much remains. Now, I think in the previous few weeks, Israel has managed to restore some of its deterrent capabilities and effect when it comes to Hezbollah, but I think there is still a feeling of vulnerability and insecurity, and until that is filled, Israelis demand a response against the Iranian ballistic missile attack. Unless and until deterrence is restored, I think Israelis are going to continue to feel that sense of vulnerability and insecurity, and the conflict will continue.
Jamie Levin, always good to hear from you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And take care. It's Jamie Levin, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Francis Xavier University.